everyone, and welcome to episode 525 of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Hello, Adam.
Howdy. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
The sun's out. It's beautiful.
It is. It is.
Where it's the end of February, everyone is going around like Northeast Ohio, like actual weather stuff yesterday. It was like first winter, false spring, second winter, and it's like you are here, but I was like, but it's beautiful.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. We have spring on the mind. So Jill, what are we gonna do today? Transition.
That was a terrible transition. Today is our March books episode. Yeah. So longtime listeners know that every month we share all the books coming out in the next month that we are looking forward to. And today it's all about March.
Yeah, it is, which really isn't spring anyway. March. I don't think spring starts till like April or May, but yep. So like Jill said, we don't tell each other what books we have, but we're pretty good at this point about knowing what the other one's going to talk about. I have a lot. I have like 10.
I have 7.
Okay. All right. There might be some overlap. I always like, there's so rarely.
There's like one that might be one you also have. I'm not sure. We'll see.
Yeah. We so rarely overlap that I don't know why I always freak out and like keep looking for more and more books to talk about, but that's what I did. So, as always, everybody, we will put these in the show notes, so no need to frantically write them down. And if you want more recommendations, you can email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com or leave us a tweet or an Instagram message at ProBookNerds. We can just get into them, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's anything else.
Okay, I have a couple that I'll start because I have a few more. I have a couple that are for upcoming interviews, so I won't spend a lot of time on them, but I just really loved the books. And the first one is Infinite Country by Patricia Engel. This is a really, really fast book. It's like 200 pages. It's getting a ton of buzz. It was blurred by our buddy R.O. Kwan, which is lovely. But it is all about this Colombian family. There's 5 different people in the family, and they are separated. Some of them are in the United States. Some of them are back in Colombia. And the daughter, I think she's the youngest daughter. Yeah. Talia is being held at like a correctional facility for adolescent girls for a thing that she did, which you learn quickly about. But she escapes, and her dad has a ticket for her to get to the United States to rejoin the rest of her family. And it's told through all of their different points of view, all 5 of them, about like how her parents got separated, how one of them ended up in Colombia, where they're originally from, and how one of them is in the United States with their other kids, why Talia is in Colombia and not back with her family. And it's just this really interesting look at relationships and separation and immigration and deportation and all sorts of stuff. It's just really beautiful, but I was like shocked when I opened it up and saw that it was only 200 pages and was blown away by how much story Patricia put into this 200 page book. So it's really good. She'll be on the podcast later this month. But yeah, really, Infinite Country by Patricia Engel will probably be one of the best books I read all year. What is your first one?
My first one is Act Your Age, Eve Brown by Talia Hibbert. This is the 3rd of Talia's Brown sister books. It's about the youngest sister, Eve, who so far in her sister's books, Danny, Take a Hint, Danny Brown, and Get a Life, Chloe Brown. Eve has sort of been this, you know, periphery character. Now she gets her own book. Very excited for this one. This is about Eve, who's a certified hot mess. That's
amazing.
Any description that starts that way. No matter how hard she strives to write, her life always goes horribly wrong. And then there is Jacob, who is a bed and breakfast owner, which again, love it. And he is on a mission to dominate the hospitality industry, and he expects nothing less than perfection. So when a purple haired tornado woman turns up out of the blue to interview for his open chef position, he tells her the brutal truth, which is not a chance in hell. And then she hits him with her car. And so there we go. So now his arm is broken, his B&B is understaffed, and Eve is there to help. And in true romance fashion, magic happens. So Yeah, that's actor age Eve Brown.
Amazing. This is one that I think we might both have, The Conductors by Nicole Glover.
Mm-mm.
Okay. All right. I think this is a mix of interests for both of us. So The Conductors is about these two characters, Hetty Rhodes and her husband Benji. During the time when it was necessary, they were conductors on the Underground Railroad, but they were using magic and cunning to keep the dozens of slaves free that they were able to get to freedom. But the war is over, and now they're using these skills to solve mysteries and murders that white authorities just would otherwise ignore. So it takes place in the 7th Ward in Philadelphia. And everyone knows, like, if there's ever a strange death or a magical curse or something going on, they go to talk to Hetty and Benji. One of their old friends ends up getting murdered, and the investigation stirs up a whole bunch of things that happen. So it's like a mix. It's magic and fantasy, but it's also like a murder mystery. Really, really excited about this one. And you know how, you know, when you'll see a book, it says like such and such, a novel. This mm-hmm. one is The Conductors, a murder and magic novel. I just like that little
love it
additional tag there. So that's The Conductors by Nicole Glover.
My next one is The Lost Apothecary by Sarah Penner. Y'all.
So I was, I've never been more certain you were going to put a book on your list.
That surprised me. There's another one on here. Well, actually, I think there's two more that are very much me books. Anyway, so The Lost Apothecary, hidden in the depths of 18th century London, a secret apothecary shop caters to an unusual kind of clientele. Women across the city whisper of a mysterious figure named Nella, who sells well-disguised poisons to use against the oppressive men in their lives. I'm already in, and I don't really care what else happens in the book, but I'm going to share it with you anyway. The apothecary's fate is jeopardized when her newest patron, a precocious 12-year-old, makes a fatal mistake, sparking a string of consequences that echo through the centuries. Meanwhile, in present-day London, aspiring historian Caroline, I'm so excited I can't even talk, spends her 10th wedding anniversary alone, running from her own demons, when she stumbles upon a clue to the unsolved apothecary murders that haunted London 200 years ago. Her life collides with the apothecaries in a stunning twist of fate, and not everyone will survive. I mean, hello. Hello.
My next one is The Lamplighters by Emma Stonex. I actually, like, just before Jill and I recorded this, I was doing an interview with Emma. This book rules. It is so good. I mentioned with Infinite Country, I think this will end up being on my best books list. It's inspired by a true story. So in 1900, there was a lighthouse where three people who were working in there, like, just disappeared. And it was off the coast. It was off of the coast of Scotland. And, like, there's these lighthouses that they're, like, out in, like, the sea, because they have to keep them near, like, reefs and stuff to keep people away. So they're literally in the middle of nowhere. So she based her story off of this. So she wrote a story that takes place in the 70s where three lighthouse keepers disappear. And the story goes back and forth between their respectives and their wives and significant others' respectives, who are, you know, in, like, this forced isolation in these basically, like, cottages. And their, you know, their husbands chose this life, and they didn't. They're forced to be by themselves. And so it takes place in two timelines, in 1972 when the men disappear, and then also, like, 20 years later when a person is writing a story about this and they are going to interview these three women who are involved. So it just kind of goes back and forth between these six different perspectives, and it's beautiful and haunting and creepy. And it gave me big, like, I don't know, it was very relatable with the pandemic, feeling isolated. Like, this was such a good isolation book. And Emma has written a bunch of books under pseudonyms, and this is the first book she's written under her own name, and she also has a history in publishing. So our conversation was very much, like, about books, yeah, like, more so even than our conversations usually. But oh, it's such a good book. So that's The Lamplighters by Emma Stonex.
That sounds really good.
It's really good.
My next one is Accidentally Engaged by Farah Heron. So this is about a Muslim woman who fakes engagement to the boy next door in the hopes of winning a couple's cooking contest. which is just perfect. So Rena is a baker. She bakes with her family, and her parents have found her yet another potential good Muslim husband. That's how that's phrased. I love it. This one would be perfect, except for the fact that he comes with the fact that it's her parents, you know, presenting him to her and not her finding mm-hmm. him on her own. And she sort of refuses to marry anyone who works for her father and wants nothing to do with this guy until a baking opportunity of a lifetime presents itself, which is a couples cooking competition. And so they decide to pretend to be engaged to get on this cooking competition. And then, of course, as a romance, things happen. So yeah, that just, I mean, you got baking, you got fake dating, which is like legitimately my favorite trope, I think. And yeah, so that's accidentally engaged.
Sounds delightful as hell. My next one is How Beautiful We Were by Imbolo Mbue. This cover is just like shockingly beautiful. So this takes place in a fictional African village of Kasawa, and it tells the story of people who are living in fear amongst environmental degradation because an American oil company has put pipelines in their like fertile farmlands and basically rendered it infertile. So there's children that are dying of toxic water. All of the promises to clean up everything and provide reparations to the village are of course being ignored, and the country's government, who is led by a dictator, basically just doesn't care about them. So they left with literally no other choice. They decide to fight back on their own, and their struggle lasts for decades and it comes at a very steep price, but it's told from the perspective of a generation of children who grew up in this horrible environment and kind of become and create their own revolution. So sounds very you know, maybe a little bit challenging to read, but it's I know it deals with a lot of like colonialism and a whole bunch of different things that I'm really excited about. So that is How Beautiful We Were by Imbolo Mbue.
My next one is That Way Madness Lies, which is a collection edited by Dahlia Adler. So this is 15 YA writers are putting a modern spin on William Shakespeare's plays.
Oh, I did see this. Okay, yeah.
This is the one I thought you also might have.
I don't like Shakespeare that much, though.
Oh, see, I thought you did. Okay, never mind then. Right, so we have Dahlia Adler. We have Anna Marie McLemore. We have Samantha Mabry. We have Tochi Onyebuchi. I mean, this Kirsten what White, like, list. This is a list. This is a list of, yeah, so there's 15. They each take on some of Shakespeare's most famous and well-known works, including The Merchant of Venice, Macbeth, Midsummer Night's Dream, Twelfth Night, Julius Caesar, and they, yeah, are putting a modern spin on it.
I could get behind that. This I could get behind.
See? Yeah.
What's the name of that one again? I know Dahlia is the editor.
That Way Madness Lies.
Yeah, sounds really good. My next one is pretty quick, but it's The Man Who Ate Too Much by John Birdsall. It's a story of the life of James Beard. So James Beard, that might sound familiar to a lot of people. The James Beard Award is like one of the most prestigious things you can win in the culinary world. And I realized, like, I know nothing about James Beard. I don't know mm-hmm. why he's the person that they focus on. And he has a really, really fascinating life. James Beard became to be known as the Dean of American Cookery, which is really fun. But that's not all he was. He had this really complex queer life and that he tried to keep hidden a lot of times and then other times didn't. And so he was all over the world. He lived in America and France, in just all over the place. And he was a failed actor. And then he turned into a kind of an author. And then he turned into a cooking teacher. And he created these very unique expressive cookbooks at a time when like that is not how cookbooks were published. And he would provide these recipes and stories all behind them, and it was just really interesting. And I realized when this was coming out, I was like, I know nothing about James Beard, so I'm very excited for The Man Who Ate Too Much.
My next one is The Castle School for Troubled Girls by Alyssa Sheinbaum. Okay. So when Moira's parents announced they're sending her to an all-girls boarding school deep in the Maine woods, Moira isn't fooled. Well, who would be? I mean, like, if your parents are sending you to a boarding school in the Maine woods, it's probably not a good thing. So she knows her parents are punishing her. She's been too much trouble since her best friend Nathan died, and for a while before that. At the castle school, isolated from the rest of the world, Moira will be expected to pour her heart out to the odd headmaster, Dr. Prince. But she isn't interested in getting over Nathan's death or befriending her fellow students. On her first night there, Moira hears distant music. On her second, she discovers the lock on her window is broken. On her third, she and her roommate venture outside and learn that they're not so isolated after all. There's another very different castle school nearby, this one filled with boys whose parents sent them away too. Moira is convinced that the castle schools and the doctors who run them are hiding something, but exploring the schools will force Moira to confront her overwhelming grief and the real reasons her parents sent her away.
That, when you said that, it is behind me on a bookshelf. I have that book. I haven't read it yet, but I think, is that Sourcebooks?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay, that's probably why I have a copy of it. I will say, I don't know if you read her, she has a different book that came out a couple years ago called A Danger to Herself and Others, which is like, blew my mind and gave me the heebie-jeebies. Yeah, I'm excited for this one too.
Yeah.
Here's another one I thought you might have. I don't know. The Lost Village by
Camille. Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right, I'll let you talk about it because it's on my list too, but
I was saving that for the end. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's totally fine. Absolutely. Okay, I have one. Okay, my next one is Lost in the Neverwoods by Aidan Thomas. This one, so Aidan Thomas wrote Cemetery Boys, and that book was phenomenal. And I think in reading the names of the people, I'm pretty sure this is a Peter Pan retelling. It's been 5 years since Wendy and her two brothers went missing in the woods, but when the town's children start to disappear, the questions surrounding her brother's mysterious circumstances are brought back into light. Attempting to flee her past, Wendy almost runs over an unconscious boy lying in the middle of the road. Peter, a boy she thought lived only in her stories, asks for Wendy's help to rescue the missing kids, but in order to find them, Wendy must confront what's waiting for her in the woods. So, maybe not, maybe just like an expansion, like an extension of Peter Pan.
Like, I don't know, inspired. How to it sounds like, you know.
There you go. But Aiden's Cemetery Boys was so phenomenal and written in such a like fun, unique, creative voice. I am so excited for their next book. So that's Lost in the Neverwoods, and also another really, really cool cover.
My next one is The Final Revival of Opal and Nev by Donnie Walton. I know I've talked about this before because it is another oral history about a fake rock and roll band from the 70s, and what is not to love about that? It's about Opal as a fiercely independent young woman pushing against the grain in her style and attitude. Afropunk, before that term existed, coming of age in Detroit, she can't imagine settling for a 9-to-5 job despite her unusual looks. Opal believes she could be a star. So when the aspiring British singer-songwriter Neville Charles discovers her at a bar's amateur night, she takes him up on his offer to make rock music together for the fledgling Rivertown Records. In the early 70s, New York, just as she's finding her niche as part of a flamboyant and funky creative scene, a rival band signed to her label brandishes a Confederate flag at a promotional concert. Opal's bold protest and the violence that ensues sets up a chain of events that will not only change the lives of those she loves, but also be a deadly reminder that the repercussions are always harsher for women, especially Black women who dare to speak the truth. Decades later, it's Opal considers a 2016 reunion with Nev. Musical journalist S. Sunny Shelton seizes the chance to curate an oral history about her idols. Sunny thought she knew most of the stories leading up to the cult duo's most politicized chapter, but as her interviews dig deeper, a nasty new allegation from an unexpected source threatens to blow up everything. So, I mean, love me my oral histories. Love me fake rock and roll bands. I started, I had an advanced copy of it, started reading it. It came, you know, at one of those times when finishing books was a challenge, but what I read was very good. So I will hopefully get back to finishing it when reading is a little easier.
My next one is Who is Maude Dixon by Alexandra Andrews. This is wild. So our main character's name is Florence, and Florence is a low-level publishing employee, and Florence believes that they're destined to be a famous writer. They stumble into this job as an assistant to this novelist known as Maude Dixon. Maude's secret identity, or true identity, is completely secret. And so it's, you know, Florence is like, oh, I'm going to learn from this incredible author, and it'll be, I'll be, not only will I learn like how to write, but how to live and everything. And so Florence becomes obsessed with Maude, whose real name is Helen. And they go to Morocco together. And then that's where Helen's new novel is going to be set. What ends up happening is there's a terrible car crash, and Florence wakes up in a hospital after a terrible accident. No memory of what happened. And there's also no sign of Helen. So she just decides, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to steal her life. So she becomes Maude Dixon, and it's like turns into this psychological thriller. So it's just like the concept sounds so interesting. I'm very, very excited for Who is Maude Dixon by Alexandra Andrews.
Okay. So my last one is The Lost Village by Camilla Sten. Oh God, y'all.
Buckle up.
I'm just going to give you, okay, first person to start with the short thing, which is The Blair Witch Project meets Midsommar. I mean,
perfect.
Do I really need to go continue? I will, so creepy, because it sounds so good. But so documentary filmmaker Alice has been obsessed with the vanishing residents of the old mining town dubbed the Lost Village since she was a little girl. In 1959, her grandmother's entire family disappeared in this mysterious tragedy. And ever since, the unanswered questions surrounding the only two people who were left, a woman stoned to death in the town center and an abandoned newborn, have plagued her. Well, sure. So she's gathered a small crew of friends in the remote village to make a film about what really happened. But there will be no turning back. Not long after they've set up camp, mysterious things begin to happen. Equipment is destroyed, people go missing. As doubt breeds fear and their very minds begin to crack, one thing becomes startling clear to Alice. They are not alone. They're looking for the truth. But what if it finds them first? Okay, so there's a couple things. First, this is a translation. I believe this actually came out last year in Europe. I believe Camilla is from like a Nordic country. So you got like Nordic horror happening here, which is already its own like cool thing that I love. This also kind of reminds me of, I think it was the American Horror Story Roanoke had a somewhat similar. Yeah. Yeah, which was delightful. And so I'm so excited for this one. Oh yeah. Translated from Swedish. Okay. So yeah, she's from Sweden. Yeah. So.
Sounds so good.
I'm pumped.
Yeah. All right. I have two more I want to talk about. The first is Raft of Stars by Andrew J. Graff. This has, it like gave me feelings of equal parts Stand By Me and Homeward Bound. It'll make sense in a second. So in 1994 in Wisconsin, there are these two 10-year-old boys, Fish and Bread. The real names are Fisher Branson and Dale Bredwin, but I love Fish and Bread. Love it. Like great names. They both of them don't have great relationships with their fathers. And what ends up happening is one night they're like kind of tired of seeing what's going on with their friends. Fish takes action, and then they hear a gunshot ring out, and the two boys flee the scene. They think that they are murderers. And so they run into the woods and they disappear, where they find a raft and they decide to raft on down basically like a river and disappear. And then four adults track them through the forest and like are trying to find them. And so everyone's on a journey of their own and for different reasons. And it's all about these boys who are tracking, or these adults who are tracking these boys, and the boys who like think that they're supposedly trying, they need to be trying to escape because they think that they're murderers. And I don't know. I just like, I'm a really, I like, you know, kind of like a journey type of a book. And it also reminded me of, like it just feels like Hatchet kind of to me. Mm-hmm, like, and I remember loving Hatchet. And again, like another really great cover. Raft of Stars. I don't know if I'm doing a great job describing it. I don't want to like just read the description for this one, but yeah, I don't know. It sounds really, really amazing. And then the last one I want to talk about is The Ladies of the Secret Circus, because I'm always going to want to talk about circus books.
Sure.
This is a magical story set in Jazz Age Paris and modern day America of a family of secrets. And so the aspects that are told in Paris take place in 1925. There's a secret circus, and you can enter there to enter a world of wonder, a world where women weave illusions of magnificent beasts, carousels take you back in time, and trapeze artists float across the sky. Bound to her family's circus, it's the only world Cecile Cabot knows until she meets a charismatic young painter and embarks on a passionate affair that could cost her everything. And then in Virginia in 2004, Laura Barnes is at the top of the world until her fiance disappears on their wedding day. And when her desperate search for answers unexpectedly leads to her great grandmother's journals, Laura is swept into a story of dark circus and ill-fated love. Soon, secrets about Laura's family history begin to come to light, revealing a curse that has been claiming payment from the women of her family for generations. I just love a circus book.
Yeah.
Love a circus book. So that's The Ladies of the Secret Circus by Constance Sayers. Again, dynamite covers this month. Really good stuff. So, yeah, those are all the ones I want to talk about too. So, buckets of good books this month.
Yeah.
So, I also love that you put that, you know, the one that, The Lost Village. In my mind, like, my justification for that creepy book is I was like, well, it's warm now. Warm reminds me of summer. Summer is basically pre-fall. It's spooky season.
Wow.
My brain works. Anything else people should know about Jill?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think everything is like wrapped up that we would need to worry about.
I think so. I believe so.
Cool. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, those are our March books. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.